Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring interactions from drug studies in a laboratory.
If this effect is as big as he's saying, somebody should have discovered this long before he did.
To global wisdom on avoiding hangovers.
Beber cerveza antes de tomar vino no previene los síntomas.
Bière sur vin et venant, vin sur bière et belle manière.
Beer before wine, you're going to be fine. Wine before beer, you're going to be queer.
To the novel recipes developed by an Indian American family deep in the heart of Texas.
And then my mom's sort of coming to America and learning that white parents love to melt cheese on things to get their kids to eat it. She was like, this is genius.
Be sure to subscribe to Meat in Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, on this journey through culinary history. And today we're going to talk about a super grain, not just a super grain, an ancient grain from West Africa. And my guest today is Pierre Thiam. Pierre is a New York City-based Senegalese chef. He's a restaurateur, an author, an entrepreneur, and a culinary ambassador. As a leading advocate for responsible tourism, as well as a spokesperson for the rich culinary history of Africa and its diaspora, Chef Thiam has heightened the profile of West African cuisine in the United States. In fact, we can say that he was a pioneering chef of West African cuisine here in America. His new mission is to popularize the African supergrain fonio in the U.S. and help farmers across the Sahel region through his new company, Yolele Foods, a purpose-driven African food company. Born and raised in Dakar, Senegal, Pierre has spent the past 20-plus years in New York. As I said, as a pioneer chef, he has opened and operated a couple of different restaurants in New York City, and he recently opened his casual restaurant, Teranga, inside Harlem's Africa Center. His Pan-African fine dining menu brings an elevated experience of the African diaspora onto the table. He is currently the co-founder of Yolele Foods, and I just found out from him, he just returned from Barcelona, where he helped design a new menu for the Cotton House Hotel in Barcelona. Pierre has authored two groundbreaking cookbooks. His first book, Yolele, Recipes from the Heart of Senegal, was a nominated finalist for the IACP Julia Child Cookbook Award, as well as a special jury award winner at Gourmand World Cookbook in Paris. And it's currently featured in the cultural expressions section of the Smithsonian's New Museum of African American History and Culture. His second book is Senegal, Modern Senegalese Recipes from the Source to the Bowl, and that was nominated for a James Beard Award for Best International Cookbook. Pierre has been featured on television and has contributed to most of the major journals, magazines, and newspapers here in this country, and he recently delivered a TED Talk not long ago about the supergrain fonio. He is a leading advocate for world hunger alleviation, responsible tourism, as well as spokesperson, as I said before, for the culinary history of Africa and its diaspora. Adam Gopnik, Pierre, wrote about you that you remind us of why gastronomy, when it's rich as all of this, is really a form of intimate anthropology. And that's kind of how I like to deal with topics on this show, because we talk about culinary history. And I thought that was that particular quote, that gastronomy is really a form of intimate anthropology, is so accurate, particularly with what you've been doing. I mean, we in this country didn't really know about the particular dishes of West Africa until you have really landed on the scene. And now you say that you are kind of moving aside and making way for a lot of new young chefs to rise up. You can tell me about that a little bit? Are there many more that have come in your footsteps, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And there's going to be even many, many more, either from the African diaspora or even chefs from just normal chefs who are just interested in what's happening in this side of the world, because it's our nature, chefs, to be curious and to look for the next thing. Or
new flavors.
New flavors, exactly. That's just what keeps us going.
Well, somebody had once said that the newest hot cuisine, everyone's trying to, you know, make predictions on what's the new best, the new next best thing. It was a couple of years ago, but I'm really seeing it gain a lot more traction now. And they said West African cuisine, that's the new hot cuisine for us to be looking towards.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not surprised about that. There's so much coming from that part of the world that's still unknown. I mean, I'm still growing and learning, and I travel around West Africa a couple of times a year. Every time I'm learning, I'm getting some new inspiration. And, you know, also another thing is it's an ancient cuisine. It's been around for some time. People sometimes don't make the connection, but Southern cuisine has its inspiration from West Africa. When you talk about the whole, like, south of the U.S. and even Latin America, you see those influences are very, very strong.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I can see that, particularly with all the different spice combinations and not necessarily spicy food, but the spice combinations and vegetable forward.
Absolutely. And greens. And I mean, the way we use it, certain ingredients, nothing is wasted in our cuisine. Mm-hmm. Like sweet potato leaves become a dish, you know, cassava leaves become a dish, and other things, you know, okra, black-eyed peas, you name it. I mean, so many different ingredients that arrive in this continent through the Middle Passage. So that's also West African influence.
Yeah. Well, when you talk about the Middle Passage, that's the slave trade.
Exactly.
And that's right. And, you know, it's interesting because you talk about that. I think you talked about that a lot in your first book.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
In Yolele. A whole chapter was dedicated to that cuisine.
And as much as a lot of those dishes and influences were brought here at that time, then a lot of those influences traveled back the other way. I mean, originally, tell us a little bit of background about West African cuisine, Senegalese and the others, and differences.
Yes. Sorry.
Bless you. It's allergy season.
Allergy season, yeah. I'm very much sensitive to it. West African cuisine, It's a vague topic. It's really it's a part of the continent that's as large as Western Europe, and Senegal in particular. Since the cuisine is connected with the environment, of course, Senegal is south of the Sahel. The Sahel is like that band south of the Sahara Desert. So it's the northern part of Senegal is quite dry, and the southern part is a bit more lush. So the cuisine varies because the ingredients change, you know. But because of the position of Senegal as the coastal, most western coastal country in Africa, we have a lot of seafood on our menu, which you won't see in other parts like Mali, which is landlocked, for instance, another country called Mali, or Guinea, which is also has a coast but not as prominent as Senegalese. We also use a lot of grains in our diet. Rice is a big part, you know, because of the colonial past, and this is how I can connect with Adam Gopnik quote, you know, because when you look at our plate, we can also see a history, you know, around the plate, just looking at the ingredients. So the rice that we use in Senegal arrived from Indochina, from Vietnam, even though we have a rice culture in the south, but that's just limited to the southern region. The French started importing broken rice to Senegal, and because the Vietnamese were using it as, you know, they cleaned their rice and they had the leftovers. Those are the leftovers, the rice debris that the French would bring to Senegal. Hmm. And we embraced it, you know, because it just came from the French, and we were brainwashed to believe that everything that comes from elsewhere is better than what we have. So even today, we still have that broken rice as like a key ingredient in our national dish, the chebujen, which is a sort of a paella rice cooked in a tomato broth. And
chebujen, I like the way you say it.
Chebujen is like, it's a lovely dish. It's one of my favorite dishes. Lots of vegetables, root vegetables and cabbage and okra, but with the fish. Fish is a meaty fish that's stuffed with a spiced parsley mixture. And it's cooked in this broth very slowly, like a tomato broth, similar to what an Italian mama broth would look like. And once that fish is cooked and the vegetables are cooked, then the rice is cooked in the same broth. So imagine the flavors.
So you have dirty rice. You have
dirty rice. Yeah. And in addition, it's flavored with fermented conch, you know, which is a way of Senegalese of doing the conch. We ferment it in a brine, and then it just brings this umami flavor.
Yeah, earthy, real deep.
Very earthy, It's a great dish. But we also have, beside rice, we also have couscous, but our couscous is made out of millet. Millet as opposed to wheat couscous, but the same consistency as the Moroccan couscous, very fine. And we serve that couscous either with broth or with lamb or with a leafy sauce like moringa, which is another super food. And many other greens can accompany that couscous. So that's another grain that you see mostly in the middle part of Senegal, like the Séré region. They call it the Séré ethnic group. Other than that, you have fonio, of course, which is a grain that you see in the southern part of Senegal that you don't really see in the north. Yet that's a great grain. Not only is nutritious, but it's also great for the environment. It's a grain that grows without much water. And I guess I'm going through your next questions.
No, that's quite all right. Yeah, we will get to that more in depth. But that's another grain. It is a grain, a lot of grains in the cuisine.
Yes, in Senegal. Yeah. In other parts of West Africa, it's less grains and more like dumplings. You know, you have like in Nigeria, what they call yam dumpling. They pounded yam, they call it, or they call it also fufu. Mm-hmm. In Cote d'Ivoire, they do the similar dumpling, but instead of yam, they use plantain. And you have it in, that
pound. Well, manioc, which is also called manioc.
Also manioc
it's a
as
fufu,
well. Yeah,
right.
Fufu, manioc. Yeah. We do fufu, manioc, fufu, yam, fufu, plantain. Yeah, there's like different, but all the fufu concept is definitely a big part of West African cuisine. You also see it in South Africa. They do it with corn, pap, they call it in Kenya, they call it ugali. So it's like, it's a variation. But the grains are typical from Senegalese. We don't do much dumplings, we do lots of grains.
Mm-hmm. So the sauces, a lot of souring agents used in the sauce too, balances out, I think, a lot of that, a lot of those other spices that are in there.
Totally. That's tamarind nice. Is
yeah,
one of them.
Tamarind
actually, Dakar, the name Dakar means tamarind in Wolof. So that's like.
Oh, does it? Okay. Now you say Wolof. Okay, so the influences, the French obviously, you were colonized by the French and stayed under their thumb till 1960.
Till now, I should say, economically, absolutely.
Economically, but tell me about the influences on the foods and the cuisines, all the different traders and people who came through. It's quite a broad influence that cuisine has, right?
Yes, and that's also due to our geographical location, because Dakar is like the entrance of Africa, in a sense. It was the port that many mariners arrived through, like Portuguese, they've been coming, Dutch, they've been coming since like the 1100s, all the way down.
It's like they hit everywhere.
they've been everywhere. And they each culture, when they come, they also bring a part of their food. Food is like something you travel with. That's the thing you don't want to leave behind.
Yeah. Again, back to anthropology. Do you learn about people? You learn about people through their food, right?
Food.
And so they brought their food with them.
Exactly. Yeah. So some stayed, in the south of Senegal, for instance, Casamance, you have the Portuguese influence that's still there. Casamance, as a matter of fact, stands for Casa de Mansa. That's like a Portuguese name with like some local language dialect. So, and we still speak Portuguese Creole. As a matter of fact, my mother would speak Portuguese Creole to me growing up. because she's from that region. Huh. But in Casamance, you'd see dishes that still have some Portuguese connotation, like caldo. You know, caldo is one of the dishes. You have pastels. You know, pastels, you see them pretty much everywhere, street food in Senegal, so, but it still has a Portuguese influence. The French influence is obvious because the French have been there for 500 years. So you have one of the iconic one is the baguette, you know, the street baguette. Yeah. Every street corner of Senegal, not even Dakar, but straight Senegal, would sell fresh baguette on a daily basis. I mean, pretty much. And we'll have it for breakfast, you know. That's like those things. Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't grow wheat, so that's
a little difficult.
That's difficult.
But, need that from someone.
But yeah, and we managed to have our baguette every day. Fresh baguette, delicious baguette too, really delicious. We have a Vietnamese influence because when the French left Indochina, you know, there was the French colonial army was called Les Tirailleurs Sénégalais. That was the Senegalese, mainly West African soldiers, but they called them Senegalese soldiers. And they were in Vietnam, in Indochina at the time. And when they left, they came back to Senegal with immigrants from Vietnam. So a community of Vietnamese moved to Senegal, and they're still there over a few generations now. And they brought their cuisine, of course.
And they also brought probably a lot of their baking background from the French,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Well, right. We had both the baking background, you know, from the French. But the Vietnamese, I mean, like, take an example. It's like the Vietnamese spring rolls that we call nem in Senegal, and they call nem in Vietnam
That's
as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Every name birthing ceremony in Senegal or weddings would have nems on the menu or just like events, you know. So it's like and you have also street food, Vietnamese street food in Senegal. You also have lots of Vietnamese restaurants as well. So
it didn't remain so much an ethnic cuisine, but you adopted it.
And
it just became part of the cultural.
Absolutely. It became part
menu.
Of the culture. I mean, some of them kept their personality. The Vietnamese blended a little better. But you have the Lebanese, actually. There's a strong Lebanese influence, a strong Lebanese community. But you go to a Lebanese restaurant, you know that you go into Lebanese restaurants and they occupy the territory downtown. But we also have Lebanese dishes fataya. Fataya is our version of Senegalese Lebanese. It's a turnover is filled with meat, spiced meat inside. It's typical of Lebanese cuisine, but Senegalese also adopted it like they did with the Vietnamese spring rolls. So we just take influences from different parts and we add it to our own influence, and our own cuisine becomes even richer, you know, which is that anthropology we're talking about. When we look at our plate, we see all these stories.
That's right. It's a world on a plate. Amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is amazing. And it's interesting, so many of the dishes have that rich-looking sauce, and whether it's a vegetarian mm-hmm. dish and sauce, or fish or chicken or beef or lamb, a lot of lamb, right?
Peanut sauce, lamb, it's, yeah.
But it is very Middle Eastern-looking and also very Southern French-looking. And you know, that you can see, I mean, even though the flavors might vary a little bit, you can see the semblances of the different dishes mm-hmm. throughout the country.
Yes. But it's still, it's still its own cuisine too. I mean, it's very much our way of eating. Our food culture is quite unique. I mean, in Senegal, for instance, you know, we tend to eat around the bowl. You know, it's not like individual plates on the table. We sit like on a straw mats on the floor, and then the bowl comes and the dish is presented in a way that, you know, you have a blanket of grains, and then you have the meat and the vegetables and the sauce, usually in the center. And everyone just imagine a triangle in front of himself, you know, and that's how you eat. You know, there's like this etiquette of eating around the bowl without going on the other people's sides. And you wait until the mother just distributes the meat or the vegetables to different sections of the bowl. The mother or whoever cooked the meal does the distribution. So that's a beautiful way of eating because it's like it's sharing, you know, and trusting, because you're just sharing this one bowl with the same people. Oftentimes we eat with our hands as well, with our right hand. So it's really like there's a communion, intimacy, you know, you and the
very
ingredients.
Very intimate, right.
Very much so.
So you get a little piece of the meat or whatever the main thing is, and then scoop up the grain on the way to your mouth, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you just arrange it your own portion with your own fingers.
Right. Oh, that's excellent. You... I was reading something that you had, because I wanted to ask you about some of the differences in the different dishes, which you described a little bit earlier on, in different, some of the different countries. But then you made a comment about, well, they're borders, but that really doesn't mean anything. Or the borders were just put on you, given to you, that's and right. They're not really borders. Tell me a little bit about that. Your philosophy on that one?
Well, I mean, it comes from two different there's different contexts. I mean, yes, I do believe that food transcends borders, and it's a fact now. It's just looking at the phenomenon of food and the how people accept other food cultures more readily. But in Africa in particular, it's just those borders are artificial. You know, those borders were never real until the colonial empires sat in Berlin. That's what they called the infamous Berlin Conference. Hmm. And that's where they decided to divide Africa in, like, okay, the French own
you this get section. This part, yeah, you get that part,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And that's something as ridiculous as that became, yeah, our borders. And today we are still going by those lines that were drawn, you know, without any of our interest in mind, you know. And so that's where the food comes to just shatter all these borders, you know, because the food and culture in general, but just because, you know, you go from one section to another. I'll give you one example, Senegal and Gambia. Gambia is a country that, if you look at the map of Senegal, Gambia is inside Senegal. You know, for me, who were born and raised in Dakar, to go to my grandparents' land in the south in Casamance, I'd have to go through another country. It's ridiculous. I'd have to go through another country. I had to go through customs and so. And yet that's the same culture, you know. Our culture, we speak the same language, we eat the same food, we, you know, we have the same last names and mm-hmm. everything. So that's the how ridiculous this situation, yeah, is. And you know, food and culture just transcend those.
Right. Well, certainly there are regional differences, but that can all be within the context of one country.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be divided up into so many different...
Totally. I mean, even the regional differences weren't even often considered when those borders were being established. You know, it was just a matter of, like, okay, you know, you get this and I get that.
Yeah, okay. Right. Well, it's fascinating because it's such a rich... The whole... all the different countries have such a rich culture.
Oh, yeah.
And I just... you know, love just looking at the photographs of people going about their daily lives. I mean, much like us too. I mean, you know, you get in your car, you go to work, you know, in the big cities like Dakar. I mean, that's a big bustling city, right? But,
definitely,
you know, but then if you go into the homes in the smaller regions, and just, I love that there are such cultural differences, because so much is getting, so much of the cultural uniqueness in many countries is getting kind of wiped out.
Yeah,
it's like traveling in the United States from coast to coast. That's a huge territory to cover, and it's pretty much the same from one coast to the next. Yeah.
It's sad, you know. It's really, you know, we have to figure out a way to slow this down, because there's so much that's being lost, particularly those cultures in Africa. They've been around for thousands of years. I mean, this heritage that we just couldn't see being wiped out in a generation. And that's what's happening. You know, language is disappearing, you know, recipes disappearing, ingredients that are disappearing, the biodiversity. I mean,
right.
It's all being affected. And yes, it's going to be like a whole big mall now, the world. And
I mean, UNESCO is making an effort to kind of save, if not, you know, document and codify, but sort of save those, you know, those cultural differences.
Important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, then we're going to start that discussion about Fonio.
Okay.
So stay tuned.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world. Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Diane Stemple.
And I'm Elena Santigade, and we're the hosts of Cutting the Curd here on Heritage Radio Network. Featuring interviews with makers and mongers and everybody in between, this show is a downright funky look at the world of artisan cheese.
You can find Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, we're back, and I am talking with Pierre Thiam. Pierre, who is a West African, West African by birth from Senegal, and is a chef and an ambassador for West African cuisine and culture. And Thiam, as I said earlier in your introduction, your new mission is really this. You co-founded this company called Yolele Foods. Tell me what the company's about, what your mission is, what you're doing, and then we'll talk about the focus of that.
Well, Yolele Foods actually came from, it was an organic happening, really. I've written cookbooks, and whenever I was writing my cookbooks, I always dedicated a page, a couple of pages for the sourcing of the ingredients. You know, so ingredients had to be sourced in a way that wasn't as easy for, you know, regular books, because it's mostly African ingredients. And then I thought, you know, there was these ingredients that are really amazing that I would like to make it more readily accessible for the readers of my book or whoever was curious about West African cuisine.
And there was no West African grocery store that you could go and
I mean, there were a few mom and pops one you'd see, but mostly catering to the immigrants community. So I would like to, my goal was to make it accessible to you and to everybody else. That was the idea. And I wanted it to be quality, you know, to really change the mindset of like just bringing ingredients that are just like, just everything from the packaging to the processing, not really up to the standards that, you know, Americans, New Yorkers, consumers deserve at large, you know. So, yeah, that's how Yolele Foods came to be. I partnered with Philippe Thévreau, who's a veteran in the food industry as well. And my first product was Fonio. Fonio was a first one for many reasons. You know, I wanted to open markets for cooperatives, for women-owned cooperatives for the most part in West Africa. And they are the ones who are processing and packaging Fonio, and actually who single-handedly saved this ancient grain by just keeping it going. Because it's a grain that requires a lot of work to process. You know, it was mostly done by hand, you know, with a mortar and pestle, you know, and to process at that rate 2 kilos of Fonio, you would have like a couple of hours easily of work. So, wow. You know, so that was, yeah.
So if you see Fonio, you know, growing, if someone handed you a sheaf of, basically it looks like grass or wheat, or like a very small grain wheat, right?
Very small grain, it's tiny, tiny grain,
tiny
looks like wheat,
grain.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this all has to be hulled and threshed and hulled and
right.
Separated by hand.
Well, back then it was done by hand. Luckily, the mechanization has arrived now, and it's easier to process. And that's why Yolele Foods came into action to not only help in securing the markets for the local farmers to the America. You know, we partnered with Woodland Foods for now. That's who's our distributor around the country. And now we are even getting involved with the supply at the supply level and equipping the farmers and buying their product at a fair trade cost. And this is really like a beautiful mission, the way it's unfolding. I'm fascinated. I knew there was a market for that. You know, I didn't know how fast it would take off, and it's been a really great reaction.
You said that the grain is very easy to grow. It grows in the United States as well. I mean, is it grown in the United States?
The idea is to keep it growing in West Africa. The idea is to definitely learn from the quinoa lesson. I mean, we just really want to make sure the ultimate beneficiary would be the small farmers in West Africa, and those women own cooperatives. It can probably
well, so our listeners don't are maybe not aware of the quinoa issue of what happened. I mean, quinoa just blew up and became so popular.
Yes.
And what happened then? It just it got co-opted by
big agri, big and those big industries just grew it for their own selves, you know. And not only they outpriced the farmers, the local farmers in Peru and Chile, but they, you know, it boom followed the bust, of course, and now it's like many of the countries could have benefited better than what's happened right now for quinoa. So for us,
so like quinoa, fonio is ancient. It is.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
been around for.
Oh, even more ancient. Quinoa has been ancient for 3,000 years, and fonio 5,000 years now. So
5,000.
It could be the oldest cultivated grain in the African continent.
Hmm. Hmm. Now you said that your hope is to keep to keep the farmers in that region, the West African region, growing. The fonio, grain, it's drought tolerant, correct?
It's drought tolerant, and it grows quite easily. Actually, it's the farmers has been the old method of growing fonio is just by throwing it on the ground when after the first rain. They call it the lazy farmer's crop for that reason. It's just you just throw the seed, and you just wait for the harvest. I mean, that's how easy it is. Then the difficulty comes in the processing part. But the growing is quite easy, and that's because it's so easy and it grows so fast, it became the grain farmers could rely upon when the rainy season is not good or the other crops didn't make it. Fonio always makes it once you plant it.
So, hmm. Yeah. Well, now I have a little bit left because I've used the rest that was one of your employees gave to me. It cooks up. Well, it's actually milled so that it's, you just have the small grains, right, mm-hmm. in a package.
And then that's the size of the grain.
That's the grain.
Yeah, yeah.
It is so tiny.
Yeah.
And cooks up in absolutely no time.
In
you
no
don't have
time.
To cook it 5 minutes. You just
exactly.
boil the water and then take it off the heat and put the lid on, just like couscous. I mean,
pretty much.
Leave it alone, right?
Leave it alone. And
it is so delicate.
Totally.
Unbelievably delicate and a little bit of a sweetness to it as well.
Yeah.
It's really astounding. But my question is, what about not only just, you know, supplying this and selling this, but giving people ideas of dishes for uses?
Mm-hmm.
Is that happening as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's quite easy with fonio because that's a versatile grain. I mean, what you can do with fonio is you take any of your favorite recipes, and you switch the grain with fonio.
So whether it's rice or couscous.
Couscous.
How does it really differ from millet? And millet's a little bit of a larger grain. It's still tiny.
Yeah,
but
It's the same family, actually. It's the same family. It's a variation.
Same.
Yeah. It's much tinier, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. So this company, you launched the company in 2017. There are other companies selling fonio as well, right?
Yeah. There are a few other companies, yeah.
And what makes you, what differentiates your company from theirs?
Oh, our company, our fonio is actually, you'll notice if you buy fonio in the market, that's not your Lele Foods fonio. Oftentimes, it's greedy, you know, due to the processing. So we're working with cooperatives. We really follow up the processing of the cooperatives before we select them to sell the fonio from those companies. So our fonio is clean, it comes up clean. And also oftentimes and other companies, they give you the fonio that's not steamed before. So we also do a steaming effect before. So all
it's
those,
quick cooking.
It's quick cooking.
Yeah.
So that's the big difference between our fonio and the other fonio.
There are different varieties, I read, of fonio depending on the region that it's grown in.
Yeah, I mean, there are two major fonio varieties, the white and the black fonio. And you also have fonios that are grown for a longer period of time, depending on the region where the latitude where it's being grown. So some can go from 2 months, as fast as 2 months, to 3 months. You know, so that's also the variations.
So they can get a crop in 2 months.
Oh yes,
And then harvest it. Wow. Yo Lele Foods. Well, I have to talk about the name first because you have this wonderful habit, no, but tradition of, you know, naming your restaurants and your cookbooks and your after particular names that are very uplifting. Yolele means?
Let the good times roll.
Let the good times roll. Wow, yes. What could be wrong? Now, that was your first restaurant.
That was
as well,
my first restaurant. Yeah. That's the Fulani word, you know, for different reasons, not only for the meaning of it, but the Fulani, the people who speak the language that says Yolele, are nomadic. That's the largest nomadic group in the world.
Hmm.
Oh, yes, they're much larger than the gypsies and you name it. So, and they've been around. They heard us. And what I liked, the connection for me, was the nomadic aspect, the fact that they transcend borders. And Yolele Foods has the ambition to transcend borders and to introduce a new food culture, not only for you, but other ingredients and other just our food culture to the rest of the world. So,
right, interesting.
So that's Yolele.
And your new restaurant, Tananga.
Teranga, yes.
And that means?
That means, that translates in Wolof hospitality. And hospitality in the Wolof culture, in the Senegalese culture, is probably the one of the most important values. You know, it just much more than hospitality. It's a way of life. It's like a way you greet the foreigners, the guests, the expected or not expected. The person comes to your country or comes to your house, and you have to show teranga. You have to offer food. You have to offer a drink. You have to offer the best of what you have. You know, for different reasons. One is for superstition that's really deep-seated, is we believe that by doing so, you receive back, like, much more, you know. And this is, you call it karma or whatever, but this is really something that Senegalese believe in deeply. So when you come to a house in Dakar, for instance, at lunchtime, people will invite you.
There's always another space at the bowl.
Yeah,
right?
It's a bowl, exactly. They say, come and eat. And you must, you know, it's like, it's a must, you know. It would be really rude if you say no. Even if you're not hungry or if you already ate, you should come and just have a bite of it, because you're giving the blessings that they expect from you. That's why they invite you.
Interesting, yeah. Well, speaking of the a lot of the myths attached to it, there are a lot of myths attached to Fonio over the centuries, right? What can you talk about some of those, some of the myths?
Yeah. There are a few of them I particularly like. You know, in the south where I'm from, you know, my the people from that region, called the Jola people and the Mandinka people, they had this belief that Fonio would protect you from the evil eye. You know, so sometimes children going to school, their mother would put a small bag of Fonio in their school bags, you know, as a protection.
To protect
them. it's a very superstitious society, and you see it further west, further east, going towards Mali. You have the Dogon people, which is also an ancient culture. They live in the mountains, Banjagara, and the Dogon people, in their mythology, they call Fonio the seed of the universe. They believe that the universe sprouted from a seed of Fonio. So that's like how important that grain is. You know, they call it Po, and that's like also the same meaning. And that can go on and on all the way to ancient Egypt, where you see Fonio being in burial grounds in ancient Egypt.
They found bags or bowls of Fonio.
Of Fonio. So that's like
interesting.
The deceased would travel with Fonio to the afterlife.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. And here you are using this little super grain, ancient seed, to try to save that whole section of the Sahel, which is this drought-prone region, as you said, both between the Sahara and the southern.
Yeah, all the way from the Atlantic Ocean to the Red Sea. I mean, like that whole band is threatened by the desert. So a crop like Fonio is great, not only because it's drought-resistant, but it has deep roots. And those deep roots tend to fixate the soil and like bring back the topsoil. So when you harvest Fonio, you just help regenerate the soil, you know, when you grow Fonio in that region. So for all those reasons, we hope to make Fonio a world class crop.
So it's Fonio. You have to look for it. It's F as in Frank, O-N-I-O, Fonio.
Fonio. Yeah. Easier to say than quinoa.
Easier
than quinoa, absolutely. And my next book is dedicated solely on Fonio. It's coming out in September this year.
Great.
With Lake Isle Press, yeah.
Oh, terrific. So you'll have recipes and recipes, history and a little bit of everything about
agriculture,
it.
Agriculture, recipes, the whole...
Great.
Yeah, so it's
gonna and Yolele Foods, Yolele, mm-hmm. do you sell other things as well, not just Fonio, or is it...
At the moment, it's only Fonio.
Only Fonio.
But we are coming from Fonio seeds to Fonio chips and different mixes of Fonio that are coming up. And the next crop we'll be introducing is Bambara beans. It's also a crop that's disappearing.
Bambara, sure. Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yes.
And speaking of different things, Fonio this and that, and Fonio chips, and then you have to have some Fonio beer to go with the Fonio
chips. Yes. I just
read about that the other day because there's the Museum of Food and Drink here in New York City is doing a special African dinner and a gala for the museum,
mm-hmm.
and one of the brewers has made a Fonio beer.
Yes,
right?
Actually,
fermented the grains.
Totally, Brooklyn breweries.
That's Oliver. Yeah,
they came up with a. We talked about it for some time. There is a tradition of Fonio beer in West Africa, particularly in Burkina Faso. They call it Chapalo, and Chapalo is like with Fonio with millet most of the time. And Brooklyn Brewery, Garrett Oliver, Garrett actually had this idea of trying to do it with Fonio. And the first time he tried it, he was so amazed by the result. And we met and we did a tasting, and it was absolutely, absolutely delicious. So now we're starting the second big batch of Fonio that's going to be launched at the Moffat Gala. And I'm excited. I'm going to meet him right after this interview. So I'm excited.
Where there's a grain and a brewer, they will ferment the grain, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's just very exciting. It's just a very exciting project that you're involved in, and keep trying to keep the grain with the West African farmers. I think that's so important. You've seen the failures of other. Of other products and how you intend to help one region, and yet then you kind of ruin it. This is really good that you have this attention to the population and to the farmers. And
totally, I mean that's the whole point. Really, it starts with that. And another way to protect it as well is we even working on keeping the appellation Fonio limited to that region. So that's another way of protecting it as well.
Yeah, it's a very light Fonio. I mean, you look at the grains and they sort of grayish colored, a little speckled, different colors, but it cooks up very very white with a little grayish tinge to it.
White and fluffy.
Fluffy. It's so delicate. I mean, it's just you don't even realize at first that they're all individual grains on your tongue.
Yeah,
it's just
very
very
interesting. And another great aspect is it's digests so easily. Have you noticed how you can eat like lots of Fonio and just go jogging right after, because it's like it digests really easily.
Don't jog. Didn't try that, but I have to get on the elliptical. I'll try. The nutritional content is very high in protein as well.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. It's particularly rich in two amino acids that are called cysteine and methionine. And those amino acids are like usually deficient in grains. In most grains, it has it in, and Fonio has it in abundance. So that's a great aspect of Fonio, beside also being gluten-free and all those other things that you see, particularly that you see with whole grains, that come with whole grain.
Mm-hmm.
And these two amino acids, Fonio has it in abundance. It's also low on the glycemic index, which is very good for diabetics' diet.
Right,
And celiac disease. Et
so listeners can find you and your product at yolelefoods.com?
Yes.
Yolele foods.com. Pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Pierre, thank you so much for sharing all this information, and best of luck to you. And we'll have to look for the book. What's the book going to be called yet?
It's called Fonio.
Oh, that's pretty easy. Called Fonio.
Fonio, right. The cookbook.
The cookbook. Okay. Pierre Thiam, what a pleasure.
Thank you, Linda.
I hope that everyone goes out and gets the taste of this grain, ancient grain that's going to help. It's going to survive in these regions and help a whole population of people.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, and this has been another Taste of the Past.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. for our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.